In today's episode, you'll learn about the E in ESG for environmental social governance. In particular, more about GHG emissions and what is net zero. We also explore how social impact professionals can make environmental sustainability a priority in their business and how to get started. Let's make a social impact. Hi everyone, I'm Carl. Welcome to the Social Impact Show, where CSR professionals get the latest strategies and tips to help them scale and grow their CSR and goodness programs. My guest today is Michael Wong. He's the Environmental Sustainability Manager with Ferguson. Thank you very much, Michael, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Michael, you know, there's the big buzzword that's going around, ESG, Environmental Social Governance. Maybe you can dive a little bit more deep into the E aspect, specifically, I guess, around GHG emissions. So what should we understand about it?
For sure. Great question. Before we dive into like the GHG emissions part, I also want to recognize that there are other environmental considerations like biodiversity, water quality and access, hazardous material management, and circular economy. The GHG emissions part gets like a lot of focus because it's one of the ones that's sort of easier to manage and like quantify and like compare between companies how they're doing. The framework I like to think about is, you know, it's hard to manage something if you can't really measure it. So GHG emissions, I think the easiest way to think about it is it's broken up into two parts. You've got the direct emissions, which at Ferguson we call our footprint. And then you've got the indirect side. So think the supply chain. So in the GHG protocol, which is sort of the corporate standard for how everybody should be measuring and quantifying their GHG emissions, they break it up into three scopes. So the direct one is scope one. At Ferguson, this is our fleet fuel use, our natural gas that we use for heating, the refrigerant that leaks out of our HVAC systems. Scope two is sort of just for electricity, and that's an indirect one. It's got its own special category because you don't really, you know, generate the electricity at your own site. Most of the times it's like generated by the utility, but it's still something that's sort of mostly in your control. And then scope three is like the other indirect sources of emissions. So think of that as your supply chain, both upstream of your company and downstream. So when consumers are using stuff that we use, there's 15 different categories of scope three. So it gets a bit like murky about how to quantify them, but each company has the task of figuring out which of those scope three emissions categories are important to them and trying to manage and quantify them too. So on the upstream side for Ferguson, there's categories like procuring and materials that go into the things that we sell, the services we use, and then like upstream transportation and distribution. And the big downstream one for us is going to be use of sold products. So the entire lifetime emissions from the products that we sell our customers. Scope three is sort of the hardest one to measure because it's not really clear where the boundaries are, but it's also a lot of times a company's like greatest opportunity for action and like incentivizing and promoting positive changes in the world too. And that's sort of why net zero goals and things like that are becoming more prominent these days.
So when you talk about these different tiers, the different categories, is this the same for all the other businesses? For all the other businesses looking to, I don't know, implement ESG or measuring their GHG emissions and so on? Is there like, so I guess maybe a two-part question, is there a standard that all the companies have to abide by? And are these usually the same measurements for each company or are they flexible in what they want to measure?
Yeah, great question. So the GHG protocol is sort of the corporate standard. And then I would say for scope one and two, it's generally the same for all companies. And so you do some collecting on the internal end about, for example, how many kilowatt hours or megawatt hours of electricity your company used in a certain reporting period. And then you would multiply it by emission factors from sources like the EPA, or you'd collect something like gallons of diesel that you use this year and multiply it by an emission factor. Scope three is where it might be different from company to company. Again, you're trying to figure for some companies, like if you're in the financial sector, it might be like financed emissions is a really important category. For other companies, like if you're in retail or consumer goods, use of sold products or, you know, thinking about end of life are going to be more material and therefore more useful to include.
So another thing that's being talked about a lot is like net zero, right? So how is that related to, you know, ESG? And maybe you can expand on that just a little bit.
Yeah. So net zero is one of those tricky terms that varies a lot and people use it in a lot of different contexts and it means a slightly different thing in each one. But scope three and net zero are sort of related in that they think about the supply chain. So I'm going to start at like a high level, like global, then break it down to national and corporate. So the highest possible level, global level, net zero is sort of the level of like emissions, inputs, outputs being balanced, where we'll get global temperatures to stabilize. So, you know, the Earth like sort of naturally processes some carbon. Right now we produce more across everybody than is taken in. And so we're getting a little warmer. At the national level, a lot of climate science is being done by the UN IPCC, International Panel on Climate Change. And essentially, like the big learnings are, you know, we don't want temperatures to rise higher than 1.5C above baseline here. And so in order to do that, the two benchmarks of emissions reductions that a lot of people are trying to keep in mind are 50% reduction by 2030. So the end of this decisive decade, as a lot of people are calling it, and then net zero towards 2050. Got so it. Countries have also set targets towards this goal of limiting warming to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. And then at the corporate level, net zero is sometimes referred to in different contexts. Some companies say net zero and they're talking about just their footprint. So their scope one and two, stuff that's directly within their control. Most companies think about net zero in context of their supply chain as well. So they'll set targets towards meeting those. And that's why scope three is really important. If we just think about, you know, leaders in corporate sustainability doing great work on their footprints, ultimately that's not quite enough. We really need to like gain some momentum and bring everybody along with us. If you've got the resources, the bandwidth, the expertise to be a leader on ESG, like we want you to bring others in your sector along with you.
So let's talk about social impact. So what can social impact professionals do within their organizations to impact the environmental sustainability aspect?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of work to be done. As I said, it's this decisive decade where we need everybody on board and helping out. And for ESG, you know, they're under the same umbrella, and there's actually a lot of overlap between ENS. That's why they're both there. So if you think about who's experiencing these environmental impacts like water stress, indoor air quality, it's people. Climate change impacts humans. And so having people who understand that side of things, I think there's a lot of interesting overlap you can find. Sometimes, yeah, I feel like when I talk about my job, it's always like, oh, thank you for your service. You're helping the planet. But I like to think of it, it's also a bit selfish. You know, I think the planet's going to be fine. It's us living on this planet that I'm worried about. And I think action here helps everybody in the long run. And it's not just a great thing for, you know, moral reasons, but also selfish reasons. So there's companies out there like Block Power who have found like a really cool niche of like helping multifamily residents in affordable housing units that have historically been underinvested in and helping them out with building electrification. So that's like a super specific use case where the S and the E and ESG are aligning, but there's only going to be a small portion of people at each company with like ESG specific roles, like sustainability focused roles, but it really takes work across the organization. And we do need that support and integration with everybody at the company to get there. So yes, there are ESG roles out there, but no, you don't really need to be in an ESG like specific role to contribute to the cause. Some of your listeners may be familiar with Project Drawdown. They've done some work to think about different like climate solution levers, like you know, food waste or like building electrification, and comparing them and like which ones will have the most impact. I think they've put out like a publication recently, like Climate Solutions That Work, and they've broken down these key leverage points and climate actions for businesses. And so like looking down those, it's, I can give some examples from working at Ferguson, how we've had to collaborate with other teams. So it's really like a big team effort, not just our own team there. So to start on that list a bit, there's emission reductions, where we've been able to work with our fleet and facilities teams a lot. There's the climate disclosure piece, where we've been able to work with legal and investor relations, stakeholder engagement and collaboration. That's a lot of work with HR, communications, social philanthropy, climate policy advocacy. If you've got a government relations program or your PR team can lean in there. Products, partnerships, and procurement, three Ps, I guess. We've got category management, sourcing, and procurement. There's a lot of finance involvement on the investments and financing side. And then obviously corporate leadership is instrumental in setting that culture and turning ESG into one of those issues that we think about every day and integrate into all of your business aspects, just like you would do something like safety.
No, I know you touched on it a little bit. So what are some of the successful examples of environmentally sustainable programs that you've seen? And I guess, what makes them successful?
Yeah, I think as a consumer, just, you know, somebody like existing in this world and buying things, seeing ads, when I think sustainable companies, I think like Patagonia and IKEA have done a really great job of not just like doing the work, but also communicating that they're doing the work and helping bring like sustainability to the forefront of, you know, the average consumer's mind, and showing that it's not like a trade-off that you have to make, but like there's a different way to live and it's really cool and it can be better for you too. In my professional experience, and we do some engagement with suppliers to act on our own scope 3, we've had the pleasure of working with the ESG teams at Whirlpool and Train, and they've set really ambitious targets. They have mature programs. They really understand a lot of the scope 3 categories and the things that go into their products. So their scope 3 is a lot of our scope 3 because we get the products from them. And they have some, they're a bit more upstream of us. So they have a better understanding of what goes in them. And then working together is how we really manage that final impact.
And, you know, like some of the examples that are pretty big companies too. What about smaller companies? Do you know, like, because I know it may be a little bit more, maybe it is a little bit more difficult to implement something like this while, you know, you're either starting up a business or, you know, you don't have all the necessary resources.
For sure. I think there's everybody has to start out somewhere. And one thing that I've found that's really nice is that I found that other teams are super helpful. So for example, if you are like, we've done some reaching out to suppliers who are earlier on in their sustainability journeys and offered resources and offered like expertise on how to calculate your greenhouse gas emissions, for example. So I found that the community is like really supportive, and there's different conferences you can go to, meet other professionals and learn a lot there, other ESG member organizations you can become a part of, and, you know, trade best practices and do a lot of learning and teaching. Like, people get a lot from it, but they also like to give into it too, if that makes sense.
Got it. So if you're, if you're somebody, a social impact professional or someone just starting out, where are some good places to, you know, how do you get started? Like, how do you maybe build an environmentally sustainable program within your organization?
Yeah, great question. So first steps, I think, is sort of identify allies, find a network of people who would like help you along this journey. A big part of that, a lot of companies, is going to be like an executive sponsor or somebody who has a lot of influence over the strategy, having your back and helping you align and really getting to the resources of implementing a program once you've got that traction. Materiality is a good first step for a lot of companies to investigate. That's essentially just figuring out which, you know, aspects of ESG are most relevant to your company. And then I think a lot of the baseline work on the environmental sustainability side is doing a greenhouse gas inventory. So figuring out your scope 1, 2, and 3, and then aligning with different frameworks out there like SASB, which is the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board. They outline which ESG things are helpful to disclose on for different sectors. And then the TCFD, which is the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, which gives out 4 different recommendations on how you can be a good steward on the climate risk side.
So, you know, you talked about like starting a program off, but sometimes it's not just about getting the buy-in, but it's also about getting the budget and maybe scaling that program too. So have you seen any successful examples of like, and maybe advice that you have in terms of being able to get not just the approval, but also the dollars to help your program grow? Like, have you seen anything like that?
I think a large part of this comes from, you know, identifying those allies and that network of supporters. And you might find those being your customer base or the investors in your company or other employees at your company. I think as, you know, climate change is being a much more salient, like, societal issue, then, you know, it's easier and easier to find people who want to use their professional work to help act on it as well.
Thank you for listening to the Social Impact Show. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Then visit benevity.com to access some of the resources mentioned in this episode, along with tons of other insights to help you grow your program. Music provided by Ikeson. For questions or topics you want us to cover, reach us at podcast@benevity.com. Until next time, be a force for good.